This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Wendy Ellingham.
And I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome back, Wendy.
Thank you.
And last week we were talking about your experiences teaching, your early years teaching in the Hawke's Bay. And let's pick up from that. You were under bond, would that be right, with the Ministry of Education, or had that changed?
No, we were still bonded, and we were bonded for 3 years.
Right.
So that included your first year, operation years, and 2 years after that. And after that, you could resign or whatever you wanted to do. But I finished my bond at Wimbledon, where I was for 2 years, and I went to Norswood to teach.
Oh, yes.
That was an interesting place.
It
was cold in February and cold in December.
Oh.
And that was a three-teacher school.
Right.
But I had older children there.
Right, right.
Which was a bit of a change from the little ones.
Yes, yes.
I quite enjoyed it.
Older children as in?
Years five and six.
Okay.
So they were standard three, four.
Right.
I lived just across the road, or boarded just across the road from the school.
Right,
so that was That was ideal. It didn't take you very long
to get to school. Hours of work and preparation and things like that. What was life like as a teacher?
I should say you probably the same hours as now, because now you can. There's so many things on the internet you can get. Well, in those days, if you wanted equipment, you made games.
Yes, yes.
Often, instead of buying them.
Yes, true.
If you wanted to say some word games, you made them. But they got a bit catty, because that was in the days before laminators.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
Quite often you were remaking them, depending on how much they've been used.
Yeah, good point.
So we actually did a lot of that. And we had planning we had to do, because the principals used to want to see your work plan at some stage. Sometimes it was once a week. In your first year, they used to have to see it every week. By the time you got Norswood, the principal would have seen the work plan, but probably when it was convenient for him, because he was a teaching principal. And he used to just go through it and have a look. And of course, the school inspectors used to look at your work, your planning as well.
So, and I think nowadays you have team leaders that still do that.
Yes, there's still people that help with planning, except it's done on laptops instead of writing it all out.
Yes, but I think the expectation is still there that you have to.
You might plan a lesson and it might not go as you want it, but you can make notes about that, and the next time you know what to do.
Yes.
So if you don't perhaps cover everything because of something, you get sidetracked often.
Yeah, and it changes all the time because different students, different learning needs, different approaches, and all that sort of thing too. Professional development then. So, where did you get it? I mean, hearing you're in smaller towns, and we haven't got the internet. We haven't got the internet.
That was up to about mid-70s.
Yes,
When I was teaching, because the first three schools I taught at were rural schools, and once a term we had a rural schools course. That was when I was at Wimbledon and Norswood, in Danny Burke, which the NZEI ran, and they were responsible for organising it. The NZEI is the New Zealand Educational Institute, union, and they would get advisors, even school inspectors, to speak to us, and I think we had a choice of workshops depending on which level we were teaching at.
And that's true too, we had advisors too, didn't they? They came in to a school.
So once a term we had that was in the three term year in Danny Burke, and then there were other opportunities to go to courses as well. You might have had a junior class one, which I think I went to once in Danny Burke, because I was the only junior class teacher at Wimbledon. So
right.
Of course I could go in. So we did have those opportunities. And when I was teaching at Wimbledon, I did go over to Poronga Hale School, which is a bigger school, a couple of times, to just to talk with the junior school teachers, the school inspectors, organise it, because just to get some ideas, because I was out there by myself with a principal who hadn't taught juniors. Well, not by myself, but not like in a city school where I wasn't had someone to ask.
Bounce ideas.
So actually, you had quite a lot of in-service, especially in the rural schools, because they...
There are fundamental differences too, being in a rural school versus being in city schools. What, in your insight over the years, this is really throwing you in the deep end, what do you think are some of the key differences in that?
Well, probably at a city school, you've got other people teaching the levels that you've got. Perhaps different, seeing more, you can see different ideas, different ways of teachers doing it, because you couldn't get, if you were in a rural school for years and years and years, you could get rather
entrenched
in ways and perhaps not want to change because it feels comfortable. And also, if you've in the city school, sometimes if a teacher's got a real strength in something, they can come in and take your class. I didn't seem to do it that often, but you could do.
It's got that, real advantages doing that too.
Yes, because you've got teachers have got different strengths. Yeah.
And nowadays it would be really great too, wouldn't it, if, and you hope that this happens, is because the rural school children are more on the farms, working at home. You know, they have a different life to the kids in the city. And so different approaches are needed in the rural school compared to the city. Would that be fair comment?
Probably, yes.
Engaging them in maths and problems.
Didn't see any problems. They seemed to enjoy
it.
They didn't seem to be any difference. They still like listening to stories. Hearing someone read stories.
But I think
probably the advantage in the rural school, I don't know about now, but classes are often smaller, but you have multi-levels.
Yes.
But that didn't really matter, because if you've only got, well, in one case, when I had 12, it didn't matter that I had year 1, 2, 3 in the class, because there were so few children. But the only thing you've got to watch when you do have that is you don't use the older ones sometimes too much to...
help the younger ones
because they have to be independent. So that can be a bit of a something you've got to watch. I would imagine in a sole charge school that would be with one teacher, that would, you could tend to use the older ones, the year 8, form 2.
That's a good point.
Perhaps more than what you should, because they still need to have their learning needs.
That's a really good point.
But I think another thing about teaching in the city schools is you can just it's in the staff room, you kind of engage with other teachers. But although when I had taught in rural schools, you got to know teachers in other schools, but you didn't see them very often because of the distance.
And the transportation to get to them time and all that. Did you get together with the rural schools for sports fixtures and things like that?
Yes, we had the sports fixtures. And I remember there was a gymnastics festival in Dannyburg that, when I think when I was at Norswood, I took some children into. Any sports we had to. Well, when I was at Wimbledon especially, there were four or five involved in it, and probably altogether we probably just had over 100, so that would just be a normal sized school. But we had it at Weber School because they had quite big grounds.
Also
it was central to the other schools.
And you could do that in performing arts or school productions, and
actually have school productions. We had concerts at the end of the year, but we just did them
locally.
Locally because of the travel, and also there was this hall out at Herbertville, which a lot of the children, where a lot of the children live, so we used to go to the Herbertville hall.
So when did you leave the Hawke's Bay?
That would have been about mid-80s, and I went to Wellington to teach, which was different.
Totally different again.
Oh, in between, when I left Norswood and I went to live in Sydney, where I taught there for a term, which was quite different again.
Very different,
About the mid-80s, I went to Wellington and taught at Karori Normal, which was interesting.
Yes.
And that was a big school. That went right up to year 8.
Form 2. And very much linked in with the teachers' college there too.
Yes, it was right next door. Yes, they used to come over and take groups. They used to do that.
So when you said it was very different, how different for you in teaching
in Karori?
Yes,
probably because it was quite a big school, and it was definitely divided into junior, middle, and
senior. You certainly had your teachers to bounce off ideas.
Yes, so it was, and I was in the middle school.
Right,
there. That was right. Yes. Then 1, 2 years, 3, 4.
Right.
And we used to have groups of students quite often come over and teach.
Yes.
The what's it called? The micro teaching.
Yes. Course. Yes. Okay. And practice at teaching schools.
Yes. Yeah. So we did that, and the principal of the school at stage, he was, I can't think of his name, but he was president of the NZEI or something.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
Yeah.
But. And that was interesting because it was a big, really big school. But and then I came to Palmerston North and relieved in some schools. And I had new entry classes quite a lot. Yeah.
So did you relieve when you got here or did
Yes, I did.
Right, so you finished your full-time teaching.
Yeah, and then... But no, I didn't really notice that change, I don't think.
I think when you're a teacher, you're in the classroom, it's a different level, isn't it?
But one of the biggest changes, I think, was changing from the 3-term to the 4-term year.
Yes,
that was
because
it was talked about several times, even when I was teaching in Hawke's Bay, it had been talked about over the years. And then, I don't know when it was, I think in the early 80s, the July midterm break was brought. It was a week. I think originally it was a day, then I think it was
a
week.
That's right, it became a week. Yes,
and then it became the 4-term year. But it was quite funny referring to the, you had the April holidays, October or September. It took a long time to get the May or August.
Yes,
but now, of course, that's been around, nearly 30 years.
Oh, so people, for as long as I can remember.
There's a lot of people that don't even remember them.
No, I remember my kids going into 4-term year.
Yeah.
Different. Do you think it was beneficial as a teacher?
I don't really know. It took me a while to get used to, and I don't really know if it makes any difference.
No,
or not, to be quite
honest. Get on with it and adapt, don't you?
Yes.
The good thing in life has been change and development. Yeah.
When we had the 3-term year, we had Easter was probably halfway through the first term, and then the second term. It was in Queen's birthday, and then they had the July midterm break, and then in third term you had Labour weekend, and in Hawke's Bay, the anniversary day is the Friday before Labour weekend, so you had a 4-day weekend. I mean, you just got on with it. I mean, sometimes you think 9 weeks is a bit short for a term.
To get it all in.
It goes,
it goes very quickly.
But I suppose the number of teaching days must be still the same because that's put out by the ministries, and I'm not quite sure how many half days it is now, but I'm sure I can't remember what it was before, but that would probably be...
I think the curriculum's more loaded somehow too, isn't it? It's, would you think that over the years? It's become very intense for teachers.
Yes, it's probably. It's hard to,
isn't it? We've got digital. Phys Ed was always there, wasn't it? But Te Reo, I mean, I know we integrate all those things, but health, nutrition, all those sorts of things. It's sort of history.
And I suppose we've always had that because, with the topics that we've
social studies and things.
And a lot of it, as you say, is integrated into other...
Going through it, yes. Yeah.
So
the teacher, so you are still teaching?
Yeah, relieving. Yes.
Yeah. And how's that for you in comparison to teaching? Full time, I should qualify that with.
Sometimes you think, it would have been nice to... have another day, in a class some things you can't. Well, I don't. So sometimes some art activities or something.
Yes,
you need 2 days for if the teacher says we'll do an art activity.
Yes,
but you have to do something that's just a one-off.
Yes,
sometimes.
Yes, yes.
Unless you know you're going to be there.
Yes, yes, and give them time
and give them
to
time
finish
to,
it.
To finish it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's Wendy, the teacher. Oh, what about Wendy? the after teaching.
What do I do?
Well, what else? What interests did you have in
well, I've
life?
Varied over the years.
Yeah.
Well, I belong to U3A. And,
right, nowadays.
I belong to the Embroidery Guild.
Ah, okay.
Which I must admit, I haven't done a lot of embroidery just recently, but I crochet.
Right.
Squares for there's an organisation called Peggy Pearl.
Oh, okay.
And they crochet blankets for charity. So, or
I
knit
think
as well.
It. I
yes.
think I've read
so
about
I'm
that.
Doing squares for that.
Yes.
And I have sometimes do yoga, except I had my back a couple of years ago. So that's
so the craft work, the embroidery and the crochet and everything. So you've always been crafty? Craft interests?
Yes, when I was little, I used to make my own dolls' clothes.
Oh, okay.
And I did learn to knit, but I didn't really like knitting much.
Yeah, yeah. So, sewing, did you do sewing as well?
Yes, yes. And I actually, in my early days of teaching, I did sewing in the classroom quite a lot. That was when you could get scraps of material
because
people would make clothes at home.
Yes, yeah.
And you could do lots of collage work and sewing with the scraps of material which people were only too pleased to get rid of.
Yeah. And embroidery is I'm imagining but it might be tapestry I'm talking about.
Oh, it's all the same. Yeah, the cross stitch, it comes under the umbrella of embroidery.
So did you start that latterly or did
no,
you always
my,
do that?
When I was at primary school we did sewing once a week for about standard one, it's about ages seven.
Right.
And we did cross stitch on gingham, so we and my
with
mother also
squares.
Embroidered too, so yes. And we made our own aprons for manual training for cooking.
Yes, yes.
And we embroidered our names on that because it had little squares on. And I just got interested in it. I mean, some years I haven't done very much.
Yes,
but
no,
over the years,
but if you've started that at seven, that's quite.
Well, that was cross stitch.
Yes, yeah, but it's quite impressive to be starting that at seven.
But that's what we learned. I remember I made a doll's apron with cross stitch and chain stitch and things on.
Yes,
And yoga I got interested in when I bought a book on yoga when I was in the sixth form and got interested in that. And I've gone on over the years. I have been to yoga classes.
Right, okay. Yeah. And are you in an embroidery group up in Palmerston North?
It's the Embroidery Guild here.
It is the Embroidery Guild. Okay, okay. And do they put on shows or
there's exhibitions and we meet once a month, sometimes as a speaker and sometimes you take along your own work to do.
Right.
But I really need to get I've done some last year. I like reading.
Yes, okay.
As well.
Yeah. So through all your teaching you were saying that you had a real passion for reading.
Yes,
you're a member of the Reading Association.
Yeah, and I've been on reading courses.
Is there, looking back over teaching and where we're at now and where we started off, would it be fair to say it's good that we've progressed, obviously, with the changing of times, but also there are tendencies now to be looking back and taking some of the good things
probably in the early days and
applying them integrating them with the good things of now too? Would that be a fair
I suppose point? Yes, because there's always, I mean, you have to accept change.
You do.
Because things do change, and especially with the devices about now. I think children do need to know how to use them, but not overuse.
Yes, yeah.
Just overuse them.
Yes, yeah. Because again, imbalance, isn't it? But have children changed over the years, do you think?
Well, that sort of sounds so funny. Yes and no.
True.
I think some of them, I think, are probably might have more. I don't put a confidence to me. Perhaps I'll say things that normally, I wouldn't have said 40 years ago.
Yes. They're quite assertive, aren't they?
Some of them, yes. But sometimes, in other ways, some of them haven't changed. It's a hard one, actually. Everything society changes, they sort of fit in with that. But some of the games and toys they play with are still the same. Like they'll play hopscotch and marbles.
Yes, yes.
So those kind of games and
dolls.
But you see, friends and toys too. Mm. But Lego is one that's still...
Oh, hasn't it?
That's still popular.
Yes, it is.
Although it's a nuisance when they bring their own to school. And they quite a lot of children now, rather than perhaps dolls, even boys bring soft toys. You know,
security their little soft toy. Yeah.
And some of the... There's probably new games, but there's still the netball and the hockey.
Mm.
And as I said, marbles, hopscotch.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for students of today? Sorry, throwing you in the deep end on that one, aren't I?
Yeah, that's actually quite a difficult...
Do you think social media is...
That's hard. Yes.
It's hard to navigate, isn't it, really, for them?
And, yes, it must be for some of them. And also some of the, perhaps... bullying that goes on with it.
Yeah.
That's because it's subtle. I mean, it's not like going out in the playground.
I mean, it's social media, isn't it? You know, it's on all avenues. It's relationships, it's knowledge, it's research. So you have to have it, but it's all these other
things.
It has to be,
monitored for... Because they have to know how to... navigate
around it and use it in balance
so that it's not upsetting for the muscles
at all. I can't think of a word really, but it's it has to be navigated and dealt with, used with sensitivity plus insight, really.
Because
it's wisdom, I guess, is a good word for it.
There would be some positive sides to it.
Absolutely. I guess wisdom. Wisdom to children of all ages. Look, thank you very, very much sharing that part of, that part of your life and some of your stories. And so you're here in Palmerston North. Do you enjoy Palmerston North, living in Palmerston North?
Yes, it's quite central to everything.
Because
I can go to Napier and
there's
lots of things going on here.
Yes, no, that's good.
There's quite a few concerts, which I like. Musical concerts.
And history. You've always been keen on history.
Well, I have actually. I wanted to be a history teacher at secondary school, but I didn't want it all. Another 5 years of training.
So you've had a life making an impact on many, many children when you think about it over the years and who's you've touched over those years. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.